Welcome once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 5th of October. The beat goes on, the mess is in place, and I have thunderstorms around me here. So we may have to, listeners, we may have to cut off the broadcast, and I've alerted Nicholas to have something to put on in case I decide we better shut it down if the thunder gets too violent, and I'll have to shut everything down, and that's the logical thing to do. The people that brought me out here, they always keep telling me I need to get a lightning arrester, and I haven't done it. Always easy to procrastinate when the need does not always come about, and to save the funds. We're always in a fund-saving mode, aren't we, listeners? At this point in time, we're always pinching pennies, trying to save here and save there, and here we have the high price of everything skyrocketing because of this last created crisis. In my opinion, absolutely, the hurricanes were created, maneuvered, made to happen to devastate our country, bring foreign troops into our country, bring up the price of oil to keep it high and make it higher. This is all very, very logical to me. As I've studied over the years all this, as many of you have as well. And that's why you listen. So residents from some of New Orleans' hardest hit neighborhoods, apparently, according to Reuters, returned home for the first time today. But officials expect few will stay since many houses were unlivable with spotty power and no drinking water. Roadblocks and checkpoints manned by police and military have now been largely removed from the city. Although the hardest hit area, the mostly poor and black Ninth Ward, is still partially flooded and remains off limits. It says moving trucks and piles of ruined furniture, appliances, and trash dotted the city's newly reopened Lakeview area as residents cleaned out their homes. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin said on Tuesday the city could accommodate up to 200,000 people, and then about 80,000 of the 455,000 pre-hurricane population was already back in town. So, interesting. Troops patrolling the city, which Hurricane Katrina devastated, obviously, on August 9th, killing more than 1,000, said activity had picked up as residents returned to check their homes. Now, I am hearing thunder in the background, and I just, you know, I'm just not confident with, and once again, we haven't had any problems lately, no problems lately with this, but if it gets any louder, I'm going to have to drop the show today, and I hope you understand, listeners, that's just the way it is. This Hurricane Katrina, and apparently it wasn't a million people that were evacuated, but who knows how many people were evacuated out of the whole area. Mississippi's never covered. We don't hear anything about the devastation in Mississippi. So 80,000 of the 455,000 pre-hurricane population was already back in town, according to this information. We'd like to have an accounting for everyone that had to disappear out of that area, and where did they go? And it's a situation that is going to multiply through the years and days, as that is the paramount reasoning for exposing environmental modification, creation of storms, maneuvering of storms, earthquakes, tornadoes, volcanoes even, apparently. And this is coming from Secretary of Defense Cohen on April 28th, 1997. It's kind of slipped me there. Much going on, people. And I want to connect dots to what happened. Well, what's happening with the Afghanistan situation and terrorism as a whole? And I think it's very, very important to connect dots to what's going on. And I think tonight's a good night to do that, because if you connect these dots properly, and I do have in cold blood The Communist Conquest of Afghanistan by Abdul Shams. He's a former economic advisor to the president of Afghanistan. Everybody has a president, keep in mind, or most countries do. I think they even have a president in China today, but I could be wrong. From the New American, dated August 8th, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the reputed number two chief in al-Qaeda, and the most, and this man second only to Osama bin Laden on the FBI's most wanted terrorist list, was trained by the Russian FSB, which is formerly known as the KGB. That's the story told by ex-FSB officer Alexander Litvin Call, who fled Russia in 2000. According to Litvinenko, as reported in the Polish newspaper Rospolitica, that's Rospolitica, on July 17th, quote, Ayman al-Zawahiri trained at a Federal Security Service, formerly the FSB, I'm sorry, formerly the KGB, based in Dagestan in 1998, end quote. Quote, he was then transferred to Afghanistan, end quote, the defector says. Quote, where he became Osama bin Laden's deputy, end quote. Mr. Litvinenko's brief revelation in that publication provides confirmation for suspicions many counterterrorism analysts have held concerning al-Zawahiri, whom federal authorities have called the mastermind of 9/11. As reported in the New American in 2001, al-Zawahiri had been very active in the purported top leader of Islamist terrorist operations in Bosnia-Herzegovina during Yugoslavia's civil war. Throughout that period, he operated from a special headquarters in Sofia, the capital of communist-run Bulgaria, which had been for decades a primary surrogate for Soviet training and sponsorship of terrorism. It was apparent that the Russians were playing both sides in the conflict, openly supporting the Serbs and covertly helping the Iranian-backed Muslims. After helping establish Iranian control over the Bosnian military, al-Zawahiri embarked on a mysterious trip that took him first through China, where he conducted financial dealings with one of the communist government's banks, then was on to Chechnya. Al-Zawahiri then crossed the border from Chechnya to Russian-controlled Dagestan, where he was arrested and imprisoned for 6 months. More likely, his detention was a cover for a period of training, planning, and debriefing. Through some supposed miracle of Allah, he escaped and made his way to Afghanistan, where he hooked up with bin Laden. Is al-Zawahiri an Islamist, or an Islamic fundamentalist, or a Russian, or a Soviet agent? Let Venko's disclosures determine the former and support the latter. After all, why would a devout Muslim do his banking in China, who choose Bulgaria as his headquarters, and sojourn in Russia? And why would he be obsessed with jihad against the U.S. when it is Russia that slaughtered hundreds of thousands of his co-religionists in Afghanistan and Chechnya, and then it is Russia and China that continue to oppress and persecute millions of Muslims today? Interesting. The point being that who's sponsoring the terrorism? Who's sponsoring the terrorism? I go back to In Cold Blood. I read it entirely on this network at one time. Not a lengthy book, 102 pages. But I want you to hear this. Let's see. During my imprisonment, this is Abdul Shams writing this book, In Cold Blood, The Communist Conquest of Afghanistan. It was written, in 1987, listeners, quite a while ago. During my imprisonment, the list of agreements with the Soviet Union grew larger. They came in rapid order. Agreements on border control, 1958. Telecommunications, road building, bridge building, hydroelectric power, 1959. Cultural exchange, river port construction, press service exchange, 1960. Housing construction in Kabul, 1968. And many more. Thousands of Soviet advisors entered Afghanistan. Thousands of Afghans went to the Soviet Union for training. Even after the king removed Daoud from office in 1963, the flood of agreements did not end. The momentum was too great. Aid from the United States, which amounted to about $500 million, never reached the level nor the permanence of Soviet aid. American aid usually came in the form of gifts, not loans, as the Soviets' aid did. It consisted of such things as road building, textbooks, and Peace Corps volunteer work. Because the Soviet Union's plan for the domination of Afghanistan was going so well, like a sinister plant, it was seeding out tendrils that entwined Afghanistan over more tightly. There was no need at that time for supporting overt revolutionary activity in Afghanistan, but the economic penetration of Afghanistan permitted the Soviets to begin the next step in the conquest of my country, political influence. Between 1950 and 1960, Afghanistan had become heavily dependent on the Soviet Union. Keep that in mind. Between 1950 and 1960, Afghanistan had become heavily dependent on the Soviet Union. 100% for armaments, 90% for petroleum and petroleum products, and nearly 50% for all international trade. The economic, political, and military stages in the conquest of Afghanistan, while they can be distinguished, should not be separated. The three stages proceeded simultaneously with varying emphasis. One ought not be deluded, as the Afghan government was, into thinking that the Soviets have no plan for world domination. They do. And nearly every action they take is in accordance with that plan. And that hasn't changed, listeners. That's the point. And nearly every action they take is in accordance with that plan. Their relationship with Afghanistan was not a benevolent one. They knew from the beginning that Afghanistan must be conquered, and they took steps from the beginning to ensure that their economic influence would contribute to their control and military occupation. The government of Afghanistan did not understand that in the 1950s and 1960s, but looking back now, one can see the cunning of the Soviets even when they appeared to be most altruistic. Let me give you specific examples of what I mean. The Border Control Agreement signed in January 18, 1958, contained a provision, Article 21, that permitted both the Soviet Union and Afghanistan to inspect the bridges linking the two countries. If Afghanistan had wanted to mine the bridges to prevent a Soviet invasion, it would have been discovered almost immediately by the communists. A bridge-building agreement signed in July 1959 specified that three new bridges would be built across the Busuda, Kamiya, and Kashmir rivers in Afghanistan by Afghan laborers supervised by Soviet engineers. The load capacity of these bridges was nearly four times as great as the largest civilian Afghan truck and large enough to support the weight of the heaviest battle tank in the Red Army. A third example of the network of roads built in Afghanistan by both the Soviets and the Americans in the 1950s and 1960s. A major segment of the highway system was built from the Afghanistan-USSR border. That's the Afghanistan-USSR border in Kushka to Herat and Kandahar, where it joined the U.S.-built highway in Kabul. The road system certainly would permit the rapid movement of the Red Army troops from the Soviet Union to Pakistan or Iran, as Khrushchev said. But it has done far more. It provided the route for the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan itself in December 1979 and January 1980. Between 1961 and 1967, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers supervised the construction of more than 500 miles of roads in Afghanistan, funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. I'm going to repeat that because it's vital. Between 1961 and 1967, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, listeners, supervised the construction of more than 500 miles of roads in Afghanistan, funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. Most of the U.S.-built roads ran east to west and were designed to be links in a vast trans-Asian highway stretching from Turkey to Vietnam. The cost of the road-building program to the U.S. was $80 million. The Soviet part of the highway network included roads running north to south from the Soviet border into Afghanistan. As part of their network, the Soviets constructed the highest mountain tunnel in the world at Sanlang Pass in the Hindu Kush. The 1.5-mile long tunnel cost the Soviets $42 million, and it shortened the road to the Soviet border by 125 miles. In constructing the roads, the Soviets used forced Afghan labor provided by the Kabul government, while many of the paved roads they built were of inferior quality, such as the asphalt streets of Kabul. The Soviets used concrete, not asphalt, for the major sections connecting with the Soviet Union. Concrete, of course, bears up much better under the treads of tanks than does the softer asphalt. The invading Soviet army used the roads they had built in the 1950s and 1960s to invade Afghanistan in late 1979 and early 1980s. Once inside, they used the roads built by the American taxpayers to occupy and control the major cities of Afghanistan. The economic aid granted by the Soviets fit neatly into their plans for the conquest of Afghanistan. That's about all I wanted to cover about that. There's much more in this book, and it's worth hearing again. But at this stage, it's vital for you to understand Agenda 21 and where it goes. There's Agenda 21 in every country of the world, and we've remodified the website here. It takes longer to load now, listeners, and I'm letting you know this because it's vital that you understand why it's taking so long to load. We have all the information from the last year on the site now as you scroll down. And there's just too much vital information that goes back into the dates. And so Darren's just run it all the way down to the bottom, back into 2004. So you can see all this vital information yourself as you scroll down. There's so much here that, It's a monumental website, listeners. It's the best website for information right now. And they do good work. They've done good work. And it's vital that it continues. It's vital that people understand that we're doing this for our country, not for our ego. We're doing this because we're concerned about our country. There's no reason in the world not to continue, as long as we have a voice to do it. To quit now would be a disservice to our country. And you must support this network, First Amendment Radio. You must support it. You must support Jackie Patru and her endeavors, and Darren and his endeavors. You have to support it. People can't be backing out now. It's vital to continue. We cannot stop giving out information. There's so few of us left now that deal with the proper information. And most of this proper information is on our website, AmericanExpose.com. It's fabulous information. As I scroll down, there's a whole section devoted to weather modification. It's just before September 8th, 2005. NOAA's National Weather Service, Deconstructing Katrina, Scalar Weather Wars. A DOE document, weather control, from the Department of Energy. A DOE document, weather control, scalar EM weather control, weather modification by cloud seeding. A status report dated 1989 to 1997. Atmospherics Incorporated. Enron, listeners, Enron and weather control. And there's an audio link here to James McCanney on Katrina and more. Vital information. Just before September 8th. I'm scrolling down because I'm trying to find a certain section that disappeared in the dates, and I want to cover it tonight because it's most important to connect all these dots. As I spoke to Jackie Patru today, she said it right. Everything is Agenda 21. She said it right. Everything is Agenda 21. And that's everyone's duty, to come to that same conclusion that she's come to after spending so many years on it. And weather modification is major in exposing this, but regionalism, listeners, had to be done before Agenda 21 could be put into action. Regionalism, the entire world is regionalized by the UN system. Vital information coming from us to connect these dots. This is for our country, our people. We've got to understand how we're being manipulated and maneuvered. Weather modification is paramount to understanding the big picture in place. If we can expose environmental modification, if we can make that happen, think of the difference we can make in our country and the world. If we can expose the UN fraud of our military being in Iraq, what a major difference that's going to make. We have people that have put together websites. Unattractive comes to my mind all the time. One individual doing his research, connecting dots to what's happening. Vital information. You go to Thursday, August 18th, 2005, and you'll find the United Nations publications, which is on our website at the top as well. Blueprint for the Peace Race has been put at the top too, but this is here under the date, August 18th. Vital information. The World Conservation Union, the IUCN, is here. CITES, C-I-T-E-S, which according to the name Jim Beers, former Fish and Wildlife, that is the pronunciation, CITES, C-I-T-E-S. And you'll see the UN Secretariat that oversees the Agreement to Protect Endangered Species. You'll see the Endangered Species Program. and you'll see the endangered species on EE link, endangered species, the main page links, vital information. Dated August 18th of 2005, listeners. Full coverage of endangered species. And then you learn about traffic. A lot of this has been put over on the left. A lot of that has been put on the left as you scroll down from the top. But this is all vital information produced by Darren and Dennis. Very important. Vital. And this is why we scroll down. This is why it takes so long for it to load up. And this is where I wanted to get to today. And, yeah, maybe I'm bypassing the news. Maybe I'm bypassing this Oklahoma City bombing, this latest one. But I tend to wait and see how things unravel before getting into these directions. Because you just can't get to the bottom of things as they're reported. That's not documentation. That's reporting. But there are just a few of the results that have been found for Agenda 21, local LA 21. And he netted 552,000 results for local Agenda 21. For LA 21, 268,000 results. Where it's in our backyard today. And you see the United Nations Division for Sustainable Development, the Global Development Research Center, the Baltic Local Agenda 21 Forum, the Local Agenda 21 Project in Moldova, the Local Agenda 21 Vin City, Vietnam, Local Agenda 21 India, Local Agenda 21 in Red China, in Ireland, in Austria, ECLI in Europe, Local Agenda 21, or actually it's called Local Action 21. Local Agenda 21, ECLI Global, Local Agenda 21, Commonwealth of Australia, Local Agenda 21 Program, UNEP, Local Agenda 21 and Tourism, Local Agenda 21, the UN Plan for Your Community, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, Toronto, Canada, We the People's 50 Communities Awards, LA 21 and the LEAP, and Mobile, Alabama answers the United Nations call. What's that all about? Vital information, people. With the adoption of by the Mobile Alabama Planning Commission for Smart Growth Guidelines and its recommendations that the City Council officially adopt the concept, the city is one step away from mandating the United Nations Agenda 21. This odious concept, Local Agenda 21, acknowledged as the United Nations program in other parts of the globe, has been intentionally renamed and repackaged for easy consumption for America. This is the vital part of it, listeners. We'll be back to continue with the broadcast. American Exposé for October 5th, 2005. Support this network and its endeavors to give you this broadcast. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at firstamendmentradio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at firstamendmentradio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on firstamendmentradio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at firstamendmentradio.com.
Notice, FirstAmendmentRadio.com is looking for new talent. Do you have the gift of gab? Do you got what it takes? Are you ready to go up against Alex Limbaugh, Rush Jones? Are you funny, entertaining, as well as informative? Maybe you know a local talent whom the nation deserves to hear. Send us a sample or email a bio for a live tryout. The nation is waiting to hear a new voice. It may be yours. We'll let the audience decide. Email us today, talent@firstamendmentradio.com. talent@firstamendmentradio.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast. It's called American Exposé on purpose to make a statement, listeners.
Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Whenever you want me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around.
Henry Lamb's website has got a lot on Agenda 21, and I see here Mobile, Alabama answers the United Nations call by Don Casey, listeners. EchoFreedom.org is the website. It's on our partner website section in our website, AmericanExpose.com. And once again, with the adoption by the Mobile, Alabama, or Mobile, Alabama Planning Commission of Smart Growth, guidelines and its recommendation that the City Council officially adopt the concept, the city is one step away from mandating the United Nations Agenda 21. This odious concept, Local Agenda 21, or LA 21, acknowledged as a United Nations program in other parts of the globe, has been intentionally renamed and repackaged for easy consumption for America. So says Gary Lawrence, one of the key thinkers on sustainable development and an answer to the U.S. President's Council, I'm sorry, and an advisor to the U.S. President's Council on Sustainable Development and to U.S. Aid. He was on the U.S. government delegation to the Habitat 1996 Habitat II conference and has also been director of the Center for Sustainable Communities at the University of Washington and the chief planner in the city of Seattle. His quote, which is most applicable, reads as follows. In the case of the U.S., our local authorities are engaged in planning processes consistent with LA21, but there's little interest in using the LA21 brand. Participating in a UN-advocated planning process would very likely bring out many of the conspiracy-fixated groups and individuals in our society, such as the National Rifle Association, citizen militias, and some members of Congress. The segment of our society who fear one world government and a UN invasion of the United States, through which our individual freedom would be stripped away, would actively work to defeat any elected official who joined the conspiracy by undertaking LA21. So we call our processes something else, such as comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth, end quote. The International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ECLI, established in the early 90s to foster and track implementation and adherence to the United Nations globalization plans, counts the number of full-blown LA21 initiatives at 37 American cities. What can residents expect after their community adopts a comprehensive plan, smart growth, or sustainable development agenda, which are all part and parcel of LA21? A concise answer is not possible in the space remaining for this article. However, the Mobile Register newspaper article provides a partial answer regarding land use. The answer is also applicable to communities across the country. In general, smart growth seeks to reverse decades of development practices favored by post-World War II suburbs, wide roads, big lots, and a complete separation of business and residential uses. Change wide roads to roads with one-lane traffic and enough space remaining for parallel parking. On two-lane roads, the sidewalk and curb are extended into the street at specific points in the road, thus periodically reducing road width to one lane. Change large lots to lots less than 50 feet wide and build narrow 2 to 3 story houses on them. Houses about 15 feet wide will be common. Houses about 15 feet wide will be common. Maryland, the first state to pass statewide smart growth legislation in 1997, requires some lots to be a minimum of 20 feet and a maximum of 35 feet wide. Change the separation of business and residential use. You can expect to see shop owners residing in the same building in which their business is located. Ownership of too many structures, house and business, may be viewed as unsustainable, a waste of resources. Planners will identify and establish a use or non-use of each land unit that is technically appropriate, economically viable, socially acceptable, and environmentally non-degrading, which is United Nations and Smart Growth doublespeak, telling you that you may claim to your own property as long as you use it as directed. Mobile and 37 other communities should have lots of smart explaining to do. Lots of smart explaining to do. Very, very relevant. Very relevant. Let's connect to mobile smart growth proposals. Go to City Council Tuesday, August 17th, 2004. Let's see what we come up with there, people. Because at this juncture, this is why this is all on the front page now. So you can scroll down, you can find all the information that Darren and Dennis have put up there, and who knows how much time is available to us to educate each other. Vital information. And it's most important that you connect these dots, listeners. Most important. As I wait for this to come up, dated March 10th, 1981, a special report from the EIR, the Executive Intelligence Review. Investigation by EIR have uncovered a planning apparatus operating outside the control of the White House, whose sole purpose is to reduce the world's population by 2 billion people through war, famine, disease, and any other means necessary. This apparatus, which includes various levels of the government, is determining U.S. foreign policy. In every political hotspot, El Salvador, the so-called arc of crisis in the Persian Gulf, Latin America, Southeast Asia, and in Africa, the goal of U.S. foreign policy is population reduction. Keep in mind the date, March 10th, 1981, people. March 10th, 1981. The goal of U.S. foreign policy is population reduction. The targeting agency for the operation is the National Security Council's Ad Hoc Group on Population Policy. Its policy planning group is in the U.S. State Department's Office of Political Affairs, established in 1975 by Henry Kissinger. This group drafted the Carter administration's Global 2000 document, which calls for global population reduction, and the same apparatus is conducting civil war in El Salvador as a consensus depopulation project. Quote, there is a single theme behind all our work. We must reduce population levels, end quote, said Thomas Ferguson, the Latin American case officer for the State Department's Office of Population Affairs, the OPA. Quote, either they, that's the government, do it our way through nice, clean methods, or they will get the kind of mess that we have in El Salvador, or in Iran, or in Beirut. Population is a political problem. Once population is out of control, it requires authoritarian government, even fascism, or to reduce it, the professionals, said Ferguson, aren't interested in lowering population for humanitarian reasons. That sounds nice. They look at resources and environmental constraints. We look at our strategic needs, and we say that this country must lower its population or else it will have trouble. So steps are taken. El Salvador is an example where our failure to lower population by simple means has created the basis for a national security crisis. The government of El Salvador failed to use our programs to lower their population. Now they get a civil war because of it. There will be dislocation and food shortages. They will have too many people there, end quote. Civil wars are somewhat drawn out ways to reduce population, the OPA official said. Quote, the quickest way to reduce population is through famine, like in Africa, or through disease, like the Black Death, end quote. All of which might occur in El Salvador. Ferguson's OPA monitors populations in the Third World and maps strategies to reduce them. Its budget for fiscal year 1980 was $190 million. For 1981, it will be $220 million. The Global 2000 report calls for doubling that figure. The sphere of Kissinger in 1975... OPA was brought under a reorganized State Department Bureau of Oceans, International Environmental and Scientific Affairs, a body created by Henry Kissinger. The agency was assigned to carry out the directives of the NSC and Ad Hoc Group, National Security Council, listeners, according to an NSC spokesman. Kissinger initiated both groups after discussion with leaders of the Club of Rome during the 1974 population conferences in Bucharest and Rome. The Club of Rome, controlled by Europe's black nobility, is the primary promotion agency for the genocidal reduction of world population levels. The ad hoc group was given high priority by the Carter administration through the intervention of National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski and Secretary of State Cyrus Vance and Edmund Muskie. According to OPA expert Ferguson, Kissinger initiated a full about-face on U.S. development policy toward the third world. Quote, for a long time, end quote, Ferguson stated, quote, people here were timid, end quote. They listened to arguments from third world leaders that said that the best contraceptive was economic reform and development. So we pushed development programs and we helped create a population time bomb. Quote, we are letting people breed like flies without allowing our natural causes to keep population down. We raised the birth level, the birth survival rates, extended lifespans by lowering death rates, and did nothing about lowering birth rates. That policy is finished. We are saying that Global 2000 and in real policy that you must lower population rates. Population reduction and control is now our primary policy objective. Then you can have some development, end quote. Accordingly, the Bureau of Oceans and International Environmental and Scientific Affairs has consistently blocked industrialization policies in the third world, denying developing nations access to nuclear energy technology, the policies that would enable countries to sustain a growing population, according to the State Department sources, said Ferguson himself. Alexander Haig is a firm believer, quote-unquote, firm believer in population control. Quote, we will go into a country, said Ferguson, and say, here is your goddamn development plan. Throw it out the window, start looking at the size of your population and figure out what must be done to reduce it. End quote. Quote, if you don't like that, if you don't want to choose to do it through planning, then you'll have an El Salvador or an Iran or worse, a Cambodia, end quote. According to an NSC spokesman, the United States now shares the view of former World Bank President Robert McNamara that the quote-unquote population crisis is a greater threat to U.S. national security interests than, quote, nuclear annihilation, end quote. Quote, every hot spot in the world corresponds to a population crisis point, end quote, said Ferguson, who had renamed Brzezinski's Arc of Crisis Doctrine, quote, Arc of Population Crisis, end quote. This is corroborated by statements by the NSC Ad Hoc Group's April 1980 report. There is, quote, an increased potential for social unrest, economic and political instability, mass migration, and possible international conflicts over control of land and resources, end quote, says the NSC report. It then cites, quote, demographic pressures, end quote, as key to understanding, quote, examples of recent warfare in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, El Salvador, Honduras, and Ethiopia, and the growing political for instability in such places as Turkey, the Philippines, Central America, Iran, and Pakistan, end quote. Through extraordinary efforts, the Ad Hoc Group and OPA estimate that they may be able to keep a billion people from being born through contraceptive programs. But as the Ad Hoc Group's report states, the best efforts of the Shah of Iran to institute quote-unquote clean programs of birth control failed to make a significant dent in the country's birth rate. The promise of jobs through an ambitious industrialization program encouraged migration toward, quote, overcrowded cities, end quote, like Tehran. Now under Ayatollah Khomeini, the, quote, clean programs, end quote, have been dismantled. The government may make progress because it has a program, quote, to induce up to half of Tehran's 6 million residents to relocate, as well as possible measures to keep rural migrants from moving to the cities, end quote. Behind the back of the president, Ferguson and others involved in the OPA and NSC group maintain that the United States will continue a foreign policy based on genocidal reduction of the world's population. Quote, we have a network in place of co-thinkers in the government, end quote, said the OPA case officer. Quote, we keep going no matter who is in the White House, end quote. But Ferguson reports that the, quote, White House, end quote, does not really understand what they are saying, and that the president, quote, thinks that population policy means how do we speed up population increase, end quote. As long as no one says differently, quote, as long as no one says differently, we will continue to do our jobs, end quote, according to Ferguson. That was way back on March 10th, 1981, listeners. There's a mention of Ethiopia. There's a mention of Ethiopia, listeners, and Eritrea is something that is in the news today. And it is vital to connect dots to what's going on. So, we see here dated October 4th from the United Nations by Reuters. Eritrea told the United Nations on Tuesday it could no longer fly helicopters over its territory to resupply peacekeepers stationed there after a disastrous border war with Ethiopia. Now, how is the border war controlled? How has it started? What made it happen? And why is the UN involved in this? This is the point that I'm driving at, listeners. This is the point of created crisis, Hegelian dialectic, being directed on a daily basis. Vital, vital information, listeners. Vital. Not connecting the dots is not proper in today's situation with our website, with what you're able to find. This is vital information. In response, the UN Security Council at a hastily called meeting said Eritrea should, quote, immediately reverse its decision, end quote, because the safety of the peacekeepers could be imperiled. There are several helicopter access routes. The main supply route for the 3,000 peacekeepers organized in UNMEE, the UN mission to Ethiopia and Eritrea. The helicopters are used for aerial reconnaissance and medical evacuations. The flight ban, quote, would very gravely impede our capability to do our job in the peacekeeping mission, end quote, said Jean-Marie Gouvenot, the UN Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping. Quote, it would also be a problem for the safety of our staff. Sometimes there are just no roads, end quote. After asked if this was a prelude to more conflict after a two-year border war between Ethiopia and Eritrea, he said, quote, it's not a good situation, end quote. Quote, if we are not able to move around effectively with our helicopters, we will have much less visibility of what's going on the ground, which can in turn create suspicions and create more instability, end quote. And this is all very vital information, listeners, because we really don't know what those helicopters do. And there's the crux of the situation. There's more on this, but there's another article. Same date. The UN Security Council expressed grave concern at Eritrea's decision to restrict UN helicopter flights over its territory, a move with serious implications for the UN mission there. Quote, the Security Council expresses its grave concern at the decision of the government of Eritrea to restrict all types of UN mission in Ethiopia and Eritrea, the UNMEE. Helicopter flights within Eritrean airspace are coming to Eritrea, end quote. Effective Wednesday, said a statement by the Council President, Romania's envoy, Mahina Matok. The Council called, quote, the government of Eritrea to immediately reverse its decision and to provide UNMEE with the access, assistance, support, and protection required for the performance of its duties, end quote. It stressed the need to implement the decision for the Eritrea-Ethiopia Boundary Commission, quote, without further delay, which will enable UNMEE to fulfill its mandate, end quote. You see what the UN system is? It's totalitarian. And the creation of wars to reduce the population goes on today. We just had a war in our country, a weather war that reduced the population, that dislocated the population in that region, quote-unquote region, a U.N. word. Quote, it's very important for the Council to uphold what is a fundamental principle of peacekeeping and a condition for our effective operations, freedom of movement, end quote, added Gueno, the Undersecretary General for U.N. Peacekeeping Operations. Very important. Ethiopia and Eritrea signed a peace pact in Algiers in 2000 to end a bloody two-year border war, but tensions have flared again under unresolved border issues. The UN always gets involved in these situations, listeners, and there is the problem. White vehicles, white helicopters, white all sorts of UN vehicles are in existence today, just not in our press at all. So we connect to Agenda 21 in Vietnam. Now, we move somewhere else. The Action Planning for Sustainable Urban Development in Vinh City, Vietnam. Quote, localizing Agenda 21 Vinh, end quote, is a collaborative initiative to enhance the local capacity for sustainable urban planning and management for the benefit of the citizens of Vinh and the quality of their urban environment. Urban development coupled with scarcity of resources often accelerates environmental degradation. The urban poor particularly suffer loss of quality of their living conditions. There is increasing awareness concerning the urgent need to harmonize urban development with environmental protection. Agenda 21 is the blueprint for sustainable development resulting from the Earth Summit, Rio de Janeiro 92. Recognizes that many of the problems and solutions concerning sustainable urban development have their roots in local activities. Now keep in mind, Vietnam was devastated during the war. We helped to create that devastation. We weren't allowed to save South Vietnam from communism, and North Vietnam was supplied by the communist Russians and the communist Chinese, the Soviet Union at the time. All this information is on the website now that you can scroll down and find, and that is vital. And being that my computer is so slow, listeners, you'll have to scroll down. It's about halfway down to find that situation about local Agenda 21 in other countries. Be back tomorrow night. Connect some more dots. Do your research on AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C, on purpose. Good night.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite. Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There is